This week on Future of Sex.
I can't lie, I've watched lesbian porn lately.
You!
And it makes me feel so weird. It's like, oh my god, does this mean I'm straight?
A decent percentage of men, definitely hundreds of thousands of men in the United States, are attracted to elderly women.
So I wrote virtual reality porn as a woman from a female perspective. So that's the piece that's never been done before.
As a black man, you have to fight so much harder. This is what we're told. You have to do things twice as well as everyone else to be half as recognized.
Number one question that women in the United States have about their husbands is my husband gay? Mm. And these are like, almost perfectly correlate with places where it's hard to be gay, where there are a lot of gay men in the closet.
Hey, I'm Bryony, and welcome to Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. Now, if you're a regular listener, you'll know we took a little break last week, and that is because we're putting the final touches on this Friday's event. This Friday, March 23rd, Australia's first ever sex tech hackathon is on. And it's not only the first in Australia, it's the first in the Southern Hemisphere, and it's looking pretty amazing. So if you're listening and you're in Sydney and you haven't got a ticket yet, you need to go grab one right now. So head to the site futureofsex.org/hackathon and use the code INTIMATE for a special discount on your ticket that's made just for our listeners. And you'll also see on that site, we have some incredible speakers and mentors from the sex tech industry. They're coming from all over the globe, and some of them you've already heard on the podcast, including Polly Rodriguez, CEO of Unbound, and Mal Harrison, Director for the Center for Erotic Intelligence. And as many of you know, I'm passionate about seeing more women in the sex tech industry. So I'm delighted to be spotting new ways for women to get involved in sex tech. And of course, men are also very welcome at the hackathon. But I think it's been really interesting to introduce this idea of sex tech to, and an event around sex tech to, Australian culture and of course my home. It's also been really fascinating to work with the Australian sex tech community because so much of my work is based in the US and Europe. And if you didn't know, for the past 6 months, I've been living here in Australia. So I've been part of the Queensland Hot Desk program, which is an accelerator focused on bringing innovation into Australia, particularly the state of Queensland. And it was pretty progressive for the government to support a sex tech program. Now, is Australia ready for sex tech? Some of you may be surprised to learn that some of the most progressive technology out there is actually founded by Australians. And one of these companies, Intimate.io, actually fits perfectly with this episode. They're also a fantastic partner on the hackathon, and we've done a lot of work together also in the US around the women of sex tech community. So if you haven't seen their videos, they came to New York and interviewed a bunch of women in sex tech. You can go to intimate.io to see those videos. But first of all, let's talk about what intimate.io actually is. Now, intimate.io is a cryptocurrency facilitating trust and safety for the adult industry. Currently, there's a big trade-off between people's desire to keep their personal data anonymous, which we are going to talk about all today in this episode, but balancing that, especially in the adult industry, with wanting the sense and the trust of safety that comes with data disclosure and transparency. And what better way to do this than with a cryptocurrency, a payment solution to address industry-wide difficulties with accessing basic banking products and merchant services due to moral bias, which we talk about a lot in the sex tech industry, the ability to just do normal things that an entrepreneur would be able to do, like open a bank account. So Intimate.io have partnered with the industry to develop this clear framework which differentiates between good and bad actors on the network. It protects human rights, it defines industry best practices, and supports ethical conduct and, of course, women in sex tech. So I'm really excited to have them as a partner on the Sex Tech Hackathon and just collaborators in the industry. So if you're interested, go check them out at www.intimate.io. or come along to the hackathon this weekend and learn more about crypto and how that may be the future of sex. Now, back to this week's episode on data and people's privacy, a huge topic which we've called Sex, Secrets and Lies as part of a taping we did in New York last year, exploring hidden worlds and the things we hide from ourselves, and of course the things we hide from others and the things that we can't hide. So before we get started, I just want to remind you, this podcast does contain explicit language and adult themes. So please make sure you got headphones in if there are little ones around. Now, let's get to it.
We're going to start with Seth, who, if you haven't seen Everybody Lies, you've probably heard about Everybody Lies, the book that was recently released around Google Trends and data. So welcome, Seth. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We met over Twitter, one of the great, great love stories. So Seth, your work, it looks at big data and it's informed so many pieces that you've written. You've written a bunch of really interesting op-eds in the New York Times. Obviously, it's the basis of your book, For Everybody Lies. And you reveal to us what America really thinks about in a way that surveys cannot, because let's face it, on surveys we often lie and we can't tell the truth even to our friends or our parents. But Google often is the truth. The digital truth serum is how you described it. So we're here for the future of sex. What are we most afraid of when it comes to sex?
I think it's kind of interesting because there are certain areas where it's become okay sexually. So I talk a lot in the book, and I think we're going to talk about today, about closet gay men. Men who are attracted to other men. But then there are also, one thing that you see in data, search data, is there are a lot of preferences that aren't acceptable today that people have, that they still leave in the closet. So I think it's interesting to see as more and more things become acceptable, we have to remember that there are many things that aren't acceptable. And that's one of the things that the data reveals, I'd say.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. I just want to dive probably a little bit further into that, into maybe the different parts of America and what's acceptable or not there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think that's one of the things that's interesting is that we think that places like Brooklyn or like California or more liberal places are more progressive about sex, and they definitely are in certain areas like homosexuality, where many more gay men who live in Brooklyn or live in California are openly gay compared to people who live in Mississippi. But when the preferences start getting a little bit more out there, you see that there are still men in Brooklyn and women in Brooklyn who live in the closet in various ways. So
what's an out there preference?
So like elderly woman, for example, mm-hmm. You don't see many. I think if you see that there is like a decent percentage of men, definitely hundreds of thousands of men in the United States are attracted to elderly women, but you don't see in liberal parts or conservative parts these men marrying elderly women or really acting on their preference. So there are definitely areas where still there's a lot of, I think, shame.
I read a study today. Well, actually, it was definitely not a study. It was like a trend piece. It was probably on Medium or something, which I love. But it was saying that millennials are no longer into big boobs. And there's this right, I don't know if you saw the piece, and they're searching small boobs now. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I should bring that up.
I don't know that one, but you do see in the data in like this huge shift from small butts to big butts in the United States.
Right.
Like since the data started in 2004. And one of the things really interesting is it's almost perfectly matched that as men were watching more and more porn with big butts, women were looking more and more how to get butt implants.
Dr. Holly Richmond, also welcome to the panel and thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much.
You also look at hidden worlds, hidden fantasies and desires from your practice as a certified sex therapist and somatic body worker, as well as being, I would say, the first woman ever to write virtual reality a sex program. Can we call it porn?
Yeah.
It's porn.
It was porn. It was just educational.
Educational porn. Virtual sexology, yeah. Too.
Yeah.
So you've been doing some fascinating work and really pioneering the way technology is going for sexuality. What did you learn about writing VR porn?
I learned it's harder than I thought it would be. And I really had to pay attention to what people I wanted people to see and what I wanted people to learn. So I wrote virtual reality porn as a woman from a female perspective. So that's the piece that's never been done before. There's a lot of VR porn coming out from a male perspective, but the female POV. So this was really with the female body. So if you had your goggles on, you would be in a female body. So I had to figure out how to write educational porn, show all the bits I needed to show from the female perspective. And it's not as easy as it sounds. And make it juicy, but educational.
Tell us a bit about that. Just like how did you even approach that in terms of looking at it from a female lens? And then also the mechanics of writing in virtual reality must be very different to just a screen, right?
Yes, very different. So one step back, I had to figure out what I wanted to write about, and that was really from my clients. I thought about what do my female clients, what do they come in with, what's their presenting problem? And it's really problems of desire and arousal and some fantasy, some of the stuff that Seth gets into, feeling okay about what they want. So I wrote three scenes. One was girl-girl, so that was easy because what I wanted to show, so we have our POV female, and I had another female. So she could literally demonstrate everything, and I had three different sex toys, so that was easy enough. And then the next two scenes about desire and fantasy were male-female. That was a little trickier, but I think we still got the job done.
Was the first part educational, would you say, and then the next part was porn, or is it all edutainment?
It's all edutainment, yeah, absolutely. And how we did that is I wrote the script, and then we had this wonderful woman. Her name is Valerie Barber. She has this smoky, smooth voice. So the actors would be acting, and then there would be like a little pause or an edit, and Valerie would read what I wrote, the educational part. So in some ways, the entertainment was really what you were watching, and you were hearing the education as the voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
So they overlapped each other.
How do I say your last name?
Jerrigan.
Jerrigan.
Yep.
I was pronouncing it French, like Jean-Ignon.
That'll work too.
Okay. So Darius is joining us from The Sex Myth. Well, that's how I found out about you and your story. Has anyone read The Sex Myth here? It's by Rachel Hills. And yes, she's also an Australian in New York, like myself. And she wrote this book a couple of years ago and has now crowdfunded to put the play on in New York. It's coming up later this month. And it features a series of monologues about people's sexual experiences. One is yours, or your experiences with sexuality.
Yeah.
And when we got talking and I got introduced to you, I got to hear all about your story and why you were participating in this, The Sex Myth. Is the monologue, it's yours, it's something you wrote?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't wait to see it. I'm going August 12th. And you basically told me your story over the phone last week, and how you were born into a family that had a very preconceived notion of how you were meant to be. As a child, as a teenager growing up, like how did you deal with having to hide what you knew you really were, and how did you overcome that? Like how did you grow up? Tell us your story.
Oh, I had to become a very good liar, which I think is a part of what probably makes me a good actor. Am I allowed to call myself a good actor?
You are apparently a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, it's I had to learn to be a really good liar, because coming up, like, I'm from Detroit, so it's a pretty tough place to be from. You from Detroit, too?
Detroit.
Yes, God. Okay, we'll talk later. It's a tough place to come up in, and, you know, you have these preconceived notions of, like, this is what a man should be, and not only am I a man, I'm a black man. So that means that, like, they're like, as a black man, you have to fight so much harder. This is what we're told. You have to do things twice as well. as everyone else to be half as recognized or something like that. And I guess I got kind of tired of being told what I can and can't do. Like even like saying the word oops. Everyone says oops, right? But I was taught that it's a very feminine thing, that men shouldn't say oops. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand it either. I don't know. I would say around like my senior year of high school, I like made a group of friends who were all sex workers who kind of taught me to like love myself. And they're like, you know, wait, what? You can let that hand hang if you want it to hang, girl. What you talking about? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that does feel kind of natural. I guess I can, you know. So I had to find my own kind of way to define myself and be like, all right, I have to be this way around my family, and I have to be this way around like when I'm in church because my mom's a pastor. So you get really good at saying, this is who I am around my family and when I'm in church and everything, and then this is how I am when I'm around my friends and stuff. Code switching, I guess, is what they call it, right? Where this is how I am when I'm around these people, and like this around that around these people. I got really good at it.
Does that still exist for you today?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, whenever I go back to visit my family in Detroit, like I'm.
Switch
I know
goes on.
Before I even go, exactly. I'm like, all right, I can't pack these pants or this crop top. Oh, but these baggy pants I never wear, I can definitely pack them now. And yeah.
So your family know a different Darius to perhaps your New York world? No.
Definitely they do. And I'm slowly introducing myself to my family, but it's a slow process. And like, yeah, they all know that I'm gay. I'm still having to turn up the masculinity a little bit
mm-hmm.
when I'm around them. But I'm slowly breaking that down, and like doing things like the sex myth has really like given me like a language to use when I'm talking to my family and friends back home, so that I can start to change their minds a little bit. And
right, so they know you're doing the sex myth.
Yeah, they
and
know.
Their reaction was.
Well, my mom's sick of me doing stuff about sex. The last
my
show
mom
I did
too.
Was about a. Yeah, see, I don't. Okay. Hey. Yeah, my last show was Adonis Memories about a porn theater. And I was like, Mom, I'm literally going to be jerking off on stage. You can't see it. Like, you just.
Wow.
You can't see
wow.
it. But now, Sex Myth, where it's not like I'm not going to be like doing anything like that, but I'm telling some really personal and intense stories. That I also I had to call my mom and be like, hey, Mom, like I know you said you wanted to come see this. I have to warn you about the stuff I'm going to be talking about. And like, I just send her the monologue that I'm going to be like performing. And she read it and she's like, oh, well, I mean, I won't be coming to see it, but best of luck. Okay.
Amazing.
I respect that.
Thanks for being here and sharing some of your stories tonight. We're going to dive into the group discussion now and get into more of the juicy stuff. As Seth alluded to, one of the big data elements that came through when you were doing your research was obviously the secret suffering that we have here in the US, particularly attributed to the intolerance around homosexuality. I want to talk a little bit more about this, particularly with Seth, Darius. Perhaps Holly can chime in too around whether this is changing, what the data revealed, and let's start there.
Okay, great. So one of the things you see very, very clearly in the data is if you ask people, are you gay in the United States, in different parts of the United States, there are huge differences with the number of men who say they're gay in places where it's easier or harder to be gay. So in places like New York or California, about 4.5% of men will say they're gay. In Mississippi, it's more like 1%. So the question is, like, there are kind of two reasons that you can think about logically. One, gay men who are born in Mississippi may move to places like California or New York that are more accepting. And the other is that they're in the closet. You can actually test the mobility hypothesis with Facebook data, where they have where people are born and where people live now. And you see that there is some mobility, but it's actually very small. So the huge percent of the differences seems to be that they're in the closet, and then the natural way to test that is to look at gay porn searches throughout the United States. And you see that here, they're almost equal everywhere. About 5% of male porn searches are for gay porn in every part of the United States, every part of the world, really. There don't seem to be huge differences in that. And another thing that's interesting in the data that kind of goes along with men being in the closet is the number one question that women in the United States have about their husbands is my husband gay? Mm. And these are like almost perfectly correlated with places where it's hard to be gay, where there are a lot of gay men in the closet. So like highest in Mississippi and South Carolina and Tennessee, where the data suggests that there are a lot fewer openly gay men. So, no. Okay. And all the other thing that's interesting about the data is that the number one search that people make after gay porn, if you follow like the same anonymous individual over time, the first search they make after gay porn is free gay porn, which isn't so surprising. But the non-gay porn related search, the number one non-gay porn related search they make is gay test. And these are also like really high.
Gay test.
Yeah, which is all, and these are also really high in Mississippi, South Carolina, like perfectly in places where it's hard to be gay. You kind of can see kind of a tortured mind.
Wow.
They're kind of going back and forth between searching gay porn and then trying to get a test that they're not, that this doesn't mean what they think they mean. So
the women are so concerned about their husband being gay rather than their husband cheating, which
I think so it's like 10% more common than is my husband cheating, and it's 8 times more common than is my husband alcoholic, 10 times more common than is my husband depressed. Although, like, one thing I argue in my book is that they're a little too obsessed with sexuality, because like there are gay men in the closet based on this data, but there are a lot more gay men, there are a lot more married men who are secretly alcoholic or depressed. Mm-hmm. But they don't ask that question, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's interesting.
I have a lot of questions. And like, one thing that it just made me think about is, if you're searching for gay porn, and Holly, maybe you can chime in here, does that mean you're gay?
Absolutely not. Yeah, so what I wanted to, you know, kind of my 2 cents here is what you want and what you watch are two very different things. So this is what I work with my clients all the time. So women, Seth, you found women watch gay porn all the time. Does that mean that they want to be gay men? Probably not, right?
No.
So people watch what they fantasize about. It's all fantasy. And I'm not saying there's definitely closeted gay men out there, but I think we really need to make a distinction between what we want and what we watch, because for sure, so many of my clients watch things that they would never in real life be interested in doing.
Right.
And it just breaks my heart that men are taking a test online to see if they're gay. Like, I'm just like, where did this test come from?
Right.
Did Tinder create this? Like, who created this test, right? Or Grindr?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I talk a lot about porn searches that I think people don't want in real life, that they're expressing their fantasies. And, you know, like a lot of people watch horror movies. That doesn't mean that they want to be kidnapped or something. And
or the elderly women, for instance. Right. You don't want to marry the elderly woman.
I mean, I think it can be taken too far in the other direction to say that there's no correlation between the porn people watch and the real world desires. And I think if you're having in parts of the country much fewer openly gay men and a lot of women asking, is their husband gay? And you actually see also in Craigslist a lot of anonymous sex, male for male sex.
Yeah. Hmm.
And like, if you put all that together, there's something that's, I think, not ideal going on there. And I don't know, you know, if they're going to say, you know, I think there is definitely cultures playing a role in turning that fantasy into something that people don't act on in having, let's say, a male-to-male relationship, but instead looking for anonymous sex on Craigslist or taking gay tests on the internet. It's definitely telling us something, you know, even if, you know, it's not easy to define what it means to be gay or not gay or, you know, lots of, or whatever.
I read an article you wrote in the New York Times about almost quantifying how many gay men are there in America.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, again, it's like, yeah, what does it mean? I don't think, you can't count that the same way you count, like, how many people vote. You know, it's not, you know, as Holly's saying, I totally would agree that it's like there are degrees of this, and people are confused when they're young and go through state, you know, there's all kind of different stuff, but I think, you know, I think you can use this data to say, you know, some people used to say that that 10% of men want to have sex with other men. And I think it's very hard to reconcile the data I've seen with that number, because 95% of men in the privacy of their own home are watching woman, basically. And I think there are other people who say that 2 or 2.5% of men are gay, because that's what Gallup tells you. And I think it's very hard. That's not true, because it's very hard to reconcile that with, well, why are there all these, you know, men in Mississippi who say they're not gay or watching gay porn and having anonymous sex on Craigslist. So I think it's somewhere in that range of, of 5%. Obviously, I'm not going to say it's 5.12, 86%, but it's something like that.
I mean, just hearing this data here is kind of reassuring to me, because, like, I know, like, lately I've been like, I can't lie, I've watched lesbian porn lately.
You!
And it makes me feel so weird. It's like, oh my God, does this mean I'm straight? But like it, I have. And so that's very reassuring. What you watch isn't what you want, because I don't know. I'm really confused right now.
Humans crave novelty. That's the story.
My data models were predicting that anal sex would overtake vaginal sex within 3 years, which I was just very proud, because I'm such a nerdy data scientist to come up with. That is my model of human behavior. But I think that is a trend that you're seeing more and more. In general, I think, I mean, the other thing is kind of like, we have this idea of what sex was before we had porn, which is Playboy, and then vaginal heterosexual sex. And we kind of have this idea, okay, there's some gay men, but it's like, if you look at like this the porn that people watch, the percent of sex that is vaginal sex is very, very small. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, something like 20%. And that's for men or women that are watching, like,
that's really low.
Yeah. And it's I think even getting lower as more people are finding other things that they find more interesting. So it's kind of also interesting, because it kind of shows that sex isn't really all about conception, because a lot of the porn people watch, the majority of porn people watch is not, you know, which I think has some correlation with fantasy, even if it's not total, is not really for, sex that could lead to a baby.
What was, like, the craziest thing? I just have to know, like, what was the craziest thing that came up in all the research or even the categories?
So, like, crazy, if you talk about the things that 10 people watch, like, that's all the way out there. Like, that's, like, you know, I don't know, humping stuffed animals was one that I found very interesting. Wow. That people would watch that, or like anal apples, which I don't even know what that is. But
what?
I don't know. The point is the ten people, like the 10 people watch, that's like 10 a month. That's like gets out there. Mm-hmm. And then, but I think like the thing that's more surprising is the things that are like in the top 100 searches. So the thing that I found most shocking in porn by far, I think, is the percent of porn searches now on mainstream sites that are for incestual desire, like incestual porn. Like, I could not believe. And that's also confirms. And that's also like, okay, well, it's fantasy. What does that even mean? But then you look at Google searches, and the top search I want to have sex with is I want to have sex with my mom.
Oh.
Which is like, which is not, I think, part of that is that you're kind of Googling it because, you know, it's like not considered normal or whatever. So you're not going to Google, I want to have sex with, like, a supermodel or something. You're going to, I want to have sex. But it is kind of like, oh, wow. Like,
because
what
it's
that?
Taboo.
But it, there are so many things that, like, again, have these reactions. I think that's what's really interesting about porn, is that there are so many things that, like, there are certain areas of society where it's now you say it, and it's like, oh, okay, like, we're all accepting, we're in Brooklyn, whatever, and there are certain things you say where it's like, ew, like, oh, whatever, and
yeah.
They're definitely out there in, like, somewhat, higher numbers than I had realized some of them, so.
Holly, as a therapist that sees people with classified dysfunctions, is that normal?
the humping stuffed animals for sure is normal. So that's a lot of girls would learn to masturbate either with a stuffed animal or with a pillow. So that's if it works that way and they get stuck in that pattern and don't learn another way to do it, then that, so that one doesn't surprise me. The incestuous stuff on the tube sites, it's a lot. And certainly I see clients, but it's usually brother-sister. I have to say, in my years of practice, I've never seen son-mother. I think that, again, I think that's just fantasy and taboo and something entertaining to watch.
Mm.
I really do. I don't. I have not come across anyone that really that's what they want, that's what they want. Again, so that's what they
it's
watch.
It's still at, right at the edge of taboo, right. So I think it would take a lot even to be able to admit that they need to see a therapist.
And it's hard for me because my whole, you know, my platform is sex positive, so if it's consensual and if it's pleasurable, it's okay. But incest, that gets into just, that's a little bit of tricky territory, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. I guess I don't want to be the one to make the judgment on it.
What's the future of porn online?
So I find it very interesting. Holly probably knows more on this area. So I think it is changing society, and it's so underground because people don't talk about it. So I think one of the most interesting things is Japan, that a lot of the young people in Japan have stopped wanting to have sex.
The herbivores is what I read they're called.
Yeah.
18 to 35, is it? Did you do any study into how old they were?
I think it's about that. And I think in general, I think porn is creating a lot of difficulties for particularly men, but maybe increasingly the number of women to have real intimate relationships. The number one complaint that everybody on Google has about a partner, whether it's a husband, wife, boyfriend, or girlfriend, is that the partner won't have sex with me. And there are actually now twice as many complaints that a boyfriend won't have sex with me than a girlfriend won't have sex with me. Mm. And I initially thought that, I wasn't sure what to make of that initially, but talking to a lot of women, they suspect that pornography may be playing a role in that, where the young men they're with are not having an interest in normal sex because of the things that they see on online. I think it is really shocking just in general, when you look at the data, if we had guessed what mainstream pornography would look like 15 years ago, it would not have been what it is today. People thought Playboy was what people wanted, and it's mainstream pornography isn't like that at all. So it's a pretty shocking development, I think.
Yeah, Holly, what do you think about that? What's that saying about so many women are saying, why isn't my boyfriend having sex with me? Can you correlate that to porn, or is it something else?
I'm not sure, but last year, so 2016 was the year of the woman walking in my office and saying, my husband or my boyfriend won't have sex with me. So far, 2017, it's gone back to how it used to be, and my clients right now are men, because I really was wondering last year, I was like, is this the sea change? Is this, you know, where we're going? I think so rarely is there a partnership where people have perfectly matched libidos. It's really not going to happen. So pretty much one's going to want more, one's going to want less. Last year, my women wanted more. This year, my men want more. So that's interesting. Bryony, remind me what your question just was that you asked me.
Well, where you think it's going, having been at the forefront in many ways with the tech.
Yeah, I agree with Seth. It's an interesting perspective. Personally, it's one I don't really want to believe and sink into. So my whole thing is sex begets sex. A young male, he can have an orgasm 5-10 times a day. I'm not saying he should, but there's enough erections in there to go around. So he could be masturbating, right? So he could be masturbating 2 times a day and still having sex with his partner. So I don't think it's that, but Seth, you were saying that they're watching things that they think their partners won't do.
I've also heard, this is going beyond my expertise, which is data analysis, but I've heard from other people that a lot of young girls in high school are complaining, they're on a first date, they're ready for a first kiss, and the guy wants to do extreme things that he learned about on porn, as that's his idea of what a date leads to. So I don't know, but I don't know if that's true.
Yes, you just opened up my whole platform. So with the future of sex, for me, it's really distinguishing what's entertainment and what's education. You're talking about entertainment. That kind of porn is pure entertainment, and it's fine, it's great, but I don't think young people know that. So we need to offer them something else that's a little bit more realistic. No. Yeah. And I think with this this fourth wave of technology, which started in 2017, in the introduction of VR, it's the perfect time to do that.
Mm-hmm. To literally change the script.
Yes.
But yeah. I think it's also really interesting. I was actually talking to someone the other day that I think porn, I'm pro sex and porn, like, I'm not a prude or whatever, but I was kind of like, I think porn may be creating problems in, like, that it's not, like, that it's, that people are finding it more enjoyable than real sex. And he's kind of like, and I think with, like, dolls and VR, like, I think it's going to become harder and harder for real sex to compete with what they, with what technology delivers. And I thought this was a horrible thing. And he's like, well, why is that bad? Like, I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know. Like, maybe if everybody secretly, like, was at home having great sex with robots, like, it sounds like a disaster, but I don't, but maybe it's not. If everybody's happy and, like, you know, I don't think current sex is that great. Like, the current sexual situation, maybe, like, perfect sex with a robot would be improvement, but.
Right. Or maybe it could just be an entirely different thing. Maybe we'll conceive of it as this totally separate thing called sex squared or something. You know?
Like, you'd only have like real sex if you wanted to have a baby.
Thanks for listening to another episode of our Salon series. This podcast was produced and edited by the amazing Chad Michael Snavely. To get in touch or check out Chad's other podcasts or inquire about producing your own podcast, visit chadmichael.com. And of course, if you've got any questions or feedback for me, if you want to keep up with what I'm doing, you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Look for Future of Sex or my name, Bryony Cole. And final shout out to the hackathon, futureofsex.org/hackathon, if you want to be involved and you're in Australia. If not, keep up online. We will be sending updates throughout the weekend. And I'm really excited to see what everyone comes up with at the end of the weekend. I think bringing more people into this industry, whether or not they have tech expertise, every single one of us got here by someone having sex. Well, most of us. And most of us have sex too. So sex is something that we are all familiar with. So don't worry if you're not a hacker or a hustler or a coder. Come along and check it out. Okay, thanks for listening. Talk to you all soon.